Greetings, friends. My name is Weston Nakamura from Blockworks Macro in Tokyo. It is after the Asia market close, and welcome to the Market Depth Podcast, bringing you global market commentary and analysis from the Asia-Pacific trading session so that you know what happened overnight. All right, we are entering Central Bank Week. Three majors are on deck for the respective July policy decisions. We have the Fed on Wednesday the 26th. We're expecting 25 basis points of rate hike. The European Central Bank, ECB, Thursday the 27th, also expecting 25 basis points of a rate hike. And then to round the week out, we have the Bank of Japan on Friday the 28th. No change in policy is the consensus, and I don't really know what that means because the Bank of Japan policy is not as cut and dry as the ECB and the Fed plus minus X amount of basis points of the policy rate and so on and so forth. All right? And we will certainly get into those complexities. But today, I'm going to go over what to watch for going into July Central Bank Week. And this particular Central Bank Week, it might actually be a bit of a defining moment. One in which the majors, the Fed, the ECB, the BOJ, might actually flip to, you know, beginning of a policy convergence era. All right, but most of the central bank discussion for today will be based on the Bank of Japan, because the thing is, the Bank of Japan, they actually might have already had their July policy meeting last Friday, as per the what's becoming now routine use or abuse of media leaking, press testing, and moving of markets as if it were the policy itself. And so we're going to dive into that as well. All right. But before that, what I was going to do was to just give kind of a few additional follow-up comments from the last several episodes on China and the yuan strengthening measures that Chinese economic policy officials have been undertaking and have been prioritizing. And I have a bunch of charts and slides and all that that were made and dated as of yesterday, and that was my intention to release the episode on Monday. But then today, I was actually at the WebEx conference in Tokyo, and I was moderating a panel of speakers on trading, liquidity, and market making. And so due to that kind of prep overlap, I wasn't able to get this out in time. So I'm just going to combine what I already had intended for yesterday, and I'm just going to add on today's sizable move in the, you know, yuan strength and the Hong Kong and Chinese equity markets and all that. So just to clarify, you know, or give a heads up ahead of time why I'm kind of dividing sort of things and charts up accordingly, right? This is the dollar CNH inverse over the last several days. And I know that you know that I've been commenting about this in depth and at length with particular emphasis and focus on the PBOC daily yuan fixing at 9:15 a.m. every day, and this recent ongoing trend of setting the yuan fixing stronger versus expectations. But I just want to take a kind of a step back from the intraday minutiae and just show you what I actually mean when I say that the yuan fixings are the only actual direct policy action that's actually really being taken and administered into financial markets, okay? Not talk, not actions, not promises, not signaling as per all this Politburo, you know, nonsense that you're getting out of Beijing, you know, as we speak. But I'm talking about actual, like, market activity that the state is taking, right? And thereby having actual market impact. This is the only thing that they're actually doing regarding anything tangible. Now, you'll note that there are just periods of significant directional movements, very sharp movements that suddenly occur. Is there any rhyme or reason to these sort of swift moves that are occurring? Yes, there absolutely are. These are not just happening randomly, okay? So, what is happening? Do you know what these white dotted lines are? Each of those are 9:15 a.m., okay? Those are the PBOC daily yuan fixing release times that I've marked on this chart. And if you look at it in this context, you'll see that each of those are kind of price action catalysts, clearly moments of market impact, okay? Because this is what actual market impacting, if not market relevant, policy activity looks like. Again, not just pledging support from officials. This is price setting, okay? And 9:15 a.m. is also when the PBOC does their net liquidity injections and or withdrawals on maturing loans of various types, most commonly and frequently being the 7-day reverse repo. So last week, July 19, we're coming off of some yuan recent yuan stability, which, as we discussed, was really just just a moment of broad-based USD sell-off. The PBOC sets its daily fixing that day stronger compared to expectations, but only 60 pips stronger, as opposed to the 100, 200, 300 pips stronger that it was doing, you know, aggressively day in and day out, just prior to, right? So when you go from doing 300 pips stronger than consensus to suddenly just a measly 60 pips, this is what happens. You get a sharp yuan downside reaction immediately upon the yuan fix time at 9:15. Because it's not so much about the delta itself, the difference between the expectations versus the actual, you know, fixed rate, but more so it's more about like the perception by market participants who are looking at it on a relative basis, like relative to the most sort of recent days or weeks in the trend, right? So the following day, this is when we get that monster 600 pips stronger fixing that I had discussed at length last week, and the yuan had a very sharp reversal rally in response. I would strongly suggest you see this previous episode of Market Depth for an in-depth explainer on this if you missed it. But again, this is all relative, right? The previous day, they went 60 pips stronger than expected. Then the yuan fell. So the following day, they went 600 pips stronger than expected, and the yuan erased the previous day's losses and then rallies even further. Which is last Friday, the PBOC goes another pretty massive 450 pips stronger than expectations. But guess what? As I just said, it's relative. So once you go from 60 stronger to 600 stronger, but then you kind of drop down to quote-unquote only 450 pips stronger, that's actually going to be taken as yesterday was a one-off top and it must just be, you know, incrementally softer fixings from here. And so that puts the top in for this little window of time of yuan ups and down moves. Okay, and then to today, or yesterday rather, the PBOC fixes just under 300 pips stronger and also drains 33 billion yuan in 7-day reverse repo. And again, from a relative context, okay? Because look, 300 pips stronger than expected, that's not nothing, right? That's what they were maxing out in the last few weeks prior to doing that gangbuster 600 pips 2 days prior. But because they did that 600 pips 2 days prior, that set a new benchmark, you know, a new standard. And that now makes the 300 pips that they just did above expectations, now that's seen as like not going full throttle. It's a half measure, right? And it also confirms yet another day of like a sequential decline, right? 450 the day before and all that, right? So, and also the rate itself was set at, let's see, 7.1451 on dollar CNY. Even though it was, you know, 300 pips stronger above expectations, the rate itself was only 5 pips higher than previous close. So it basically means it's unchanged from the previous day. And so, in aggregate, all that put together, the market sold the yuan off. And, you know, the downside aided by a sell-off in equity markets. Hang Seng was losing, what, 2.25% on the day. Minus 3% from AM peak to its lows. It's the worst one-day drop in over a month. Let's fast forward to today. Now we're getting a ton of Politburo talk and notes coming out about support of this and that and, you know, this sector, that sector, this kind of pledging of support or whatever, right? Just a ton of jawboning and obviously no actual follow-through. So yesterday, Monday's equity market, if you look at the Hang Seng Index in particular, you'll see that it had fallen over 2%, so pretty down day. And then today, the Hang Seng rallied over 4%. What was the news flow change? Yeah, I guess you can parse apart like differences in things that are coming out of like, you know, Politburo signaling and all that. But I mean, frankly, look, it's not as if market participants collectively just, you know, like had ignored it one day and then accepted and rallied it the next day. Okay, despite that being the media narrative. No, that is not how things work. That's how a single mind works. That's not how the collective market participants operate. Okay. So what was the difference? What was the driver? Oh, gee, I don't know. Perhaps it was policies that are actually involved in green and red blinking tickers, in market activity itself, such as yuan fixings once again. So here is why the equity market is responding positively today as opposed to yesterday. Because you have a very strong yuan fixing for today as opposed to the previous day. And I purposely marked 9:15 a.m. with that yellow line and that time marker there. And you can see that prior to cash open, which is at 9:30, the yuan was fixed stronger than the yuan rallied, and that is what uplifted the Hang Seng Index for the day. And that's what continued to push the Hang Seng Index higher for the day. Now, of course, there's short covering involved in that too. This is why the markets had, quote-unquote, responded to the Politburo. They're responding to what's actually happening in actual markets and market activity, as in the yuan. Price levels sometimes exist. Sometimes they're very evident. Sometimes they're not. But when they are, obviously pay attention to them. So just in combination, here's the timing, right? 9:15 a.m. is when they do the actual price setting. And then they could obviously follow up with state banks to keep the flow going. And then in combination with, specific price level, if one could be identified, if one even exists at all. All right. So that's it for Communist China and their state-controlled markets. Now, let's discuss another state-controlled market, but one that, unlike China, purports to be free market capitalist, and that would be Japan. Now, forgive me in advance, but I'm just going to have to tear up Japan's economic policy officials up a bit here because, A, they deserve it, and B, it annoys me. So, remember when I said in a recent episode that if you are going to invest in China, by all means do so, just as long as you understand that you are not investing in a market-based capitalist system, and therefore you need to be running analysis through the lens of like a, you know, policy or even like personnel approach, right? Rather than some like fair value financial model, whatever, right? Well advertised that this is not capitalism, this is communism. And I'm not criticizing or anything like that. They're not attempting to hide anything. It just is what it is. Japan, however, purports to be, yet Japan exhibits an enormous amount of top-down state control of, you know, market pricing and market behavior, you know, by non-economic actors, and not allowing for price discovery or for market participants to engage in markets without some sort of interference. And I will tell you exactly what I'm talking about. And so let's talk about the Bank of Japan. So last Friday, after market close in Japan, a week before the July BOJ, mind you, we once again get another round of press tests and press leaking from Reuters and Bloomberg, a 1-2 punch. And the body of it is as follows: that the BOJ is standing pat on yield curve control for next week, or for this Friday, according to quote-unquote sources. And by sources, it's the heads of the Bank of Japan. And this was the market reaction upon this sudden press leak. This is a huge forced short cover happening in JGB futures. like on massive volumes. In the 10 minutes between 4:30 p.m. and 4:40 p.m. Japan time, which, again, this is after market close for the weekend, Japan traders who are no longer at their desks, but and it's also that time is also 3:30 to 3:40 a.m. Eastern time in the U.S. So U.S. traders are also dead asleep, okay? So during those 10 minutes, we saw about 8 or 9,000 September JGB futures contracts get the living daylights short squeezed out of them, okay? It's about $6.5 billion notional in JGB futures that traded in 10 minutes and in one direction only, upwards. Now, I tweeted about this when it happened on Friday, and I'm just going to repeat it here because of how much stuff like this just, you know, infuriates me, okay? So here's what I said. Shorting JGBs, that's never been my trade, but this is just dirty and unfair, and it's borderline market manipulation. And so Governor Ueda, either grow a pair and deal with market moves upon policy release, or don't. But either way, stop having the press do your work for you. Stop catching traders off guard and clearing out positions, okay? And I mean it, right? Nobody else does this. No other central bank, not even predecessors. Kuroda, Governor Kuroda, he did this very occasionally, but he did this because he used to be the exact opposite, in which he'd actually take massive, decisive direction, you know, actions and for the purpose of shocking and surprising markets, and then get thereby getting the most bang for his buck, or bang for his yen. And then, when the surprise negative rate shock and awe thing, when that backfired on him, then he kind of realized, like, okay, this is actually a bad idea, this is a bad tactic, and so he went 180, you know, the other way, and he no longer did this kind of shock and awe policy, because once you put it out there as, you know, as a policymaker, it's official. And you can't take it back. And so he would sometimes just use the press to test out there and see how the markets would react. And if it didn't work out, and if there's a volatility or something that, you know, an unfavorable market reaction, he can always, like, walk that back, because that was just press nonsense. And he only used this, like, what, 3, 4, 5 times over the following, like, 5 years of his tenure. For Governor Ueda, however, two of his last three meetings now, under his belt, they've been pre-announced by the press, okay? And so now it's becoming the norm, despite that record being very short. If you recall his first Bank of Japan meeting in April, that was just, like, jaw-droppingly horrendous. You have, you know, a ton of press testing leading up to the BOJ day itself, but on the Bank of Japan policy release day itself, that morning, Nikkei News releasing the detailed policy at 10 a.m. on the day of the policy meeting release, hours in advance. I mean, they did that, and then Ueda just sits back and observes market reactions until officially releasing the policy statement at 1 p.m. It's incredible, right? If you don't know what I'm talking about, see my episode on that too. It's from April 17th. It's called "A Chaotic First Meeting for the Bank of Japan Governor Ueda." That's a very relevant episode, because this is happening right now as we speak. This is what I was talking about. But you don't hide behind the press and leak out policies to try to deflect market volatility. You're the governor of one of the big four major central banks, and just because nobody else wanted the job, that doesn't mean that your arm was twisted into taking it. And it is very harmful as well, because what you're going to do if you keep doing things like this is you are going to not only screw over traders and lose all credibility and lose all, you know, kind of market confidence in the policymakers' treatment of the market and treatment of investors, but you're doing that at a time where you're given a gift of Warren Buffett endorsing Japanese equities and getting massive amounts of foreign inflows into the equity market. Okay, do you want to scare them off with your nonsense? just accept the fact that central bankers have the ability to move markets. And if you can't handle that, step the hell down, because this is unacceptable. All right. And look, it's not just like the JGB market and UEDA either. Okay. At the same time, we actually had Kanda-san from the Ministry of Finance, i.e. Mr. Yentervention. He was also simultaneously out there on Friday evening making the usual public commentary of excessive moves are undesirable and we will act as necessary to intervene in the FX markets and all of that, because upon release of this articles out of Reuters and Bloomberg of a no change to the BOJ policy for July, dollar yen, of course, rallied, and those positions were suddenly, you know, unwound as well. Dollar yen that's blasting through 140 resistance for the sudden 1.3%, you know, spike upon this press release. And here are yen futures that are getting crushed and getting crushed on volume as well. And this is what I say, sarcastically, obviously, when I say that I thought the July Bank of Japan policy meeting date was next Friday, you know, not this past Friday. This is what I'm talking about, right? I'm saying it sarcastically, but I'm not really kidding. All right, look, here's dollar yen. This is just spot dollar yen, all right? This is the June Bank of Japan policy meeting, the last one, okay? This was, by the way, this is the only meeting that under Governor Kuroda that wasn't pre-press tested, and the reason for that is because the setup going into this last one in June, there was absolutely nothing in the markets nor consensus to have to, like, pre-dispel a move in markets, right? June BOJ, no policy change as per consensus, and we still got a pretty swift intraday dollar-yen upside move upon the policy release and the UEDA press conference, and then dollar-yen going from under 140 at the time to nearly 142. And as you can also see, that also then subsequently kicked off a new leg higher of yen weakness or dollar yen upside. Now, compare that June BOJ day's move, the last one, compare that to this past Friday's aftermarket press test releases. Dollar yen moves from just under 140 up to 142. It's the same move. And it's basically the same exact velocity as well, okay? So as far as green and red blinking tickers are concerned, July BOJ policy meeting release day was last Friday. Now, look, as you can tell, I really hate these, like, press tests and media pre-leaking that UEDA is and has been completely dependent upon and relying upon. There's an infinite amount of reasons that I hate them. So you're normalizing shady media relations and, like, insider info between policymakers and all that. And you're just unabashedly screwing market participants again, right? Who are being forced exited out of positions because they didn't know that you moved the goalpost or you moved the game time forward by a week and, you know, forced a no-show forfeit, right? It's like being like a boxer who just suddenly knocks his unsuspecting opponent out cold with his fist at the weigh-in because he's afraid of getting, you know, in the ring to fight himself. All right, but a leaking of a policy unchanged or maintained, fine, whatever. But what I really have a problem with is using, quote, state media outlets like Reuters Japan and Bloomberg Japan to pre-announce policy into unsuspecting markets, which then, you know, move as if the policy has been officially released. And then amidst that, you additionally then also have simultaneously, you get the Ministry of Finance out there to talk up the yen, right? And saying ridiculous things like currencies should move on fundamentals. Well, then get the hell out of the way. If you want to set the price on the long end of the sovereign yield curve, fine, be my guest, right? The trade-off for doing that is that the currency is going to have to weaken in a rising yield environment. You cannot have both state-backed debt support and state-backed currency support at the same time. And since it's going to be one or the other, and since BOJ has been at QE forever, and since the Bank of Japan's debt burden is far more of a problem than a weakening currency, and because there's no turning back for Japan with how much of the JGB market that they own, then QE and JGBs it is, which means, Governor Kuroda of the Bank of Japan, do your job yourself, okay? Do not outsource market volatility to Reuters and Nikkei and Bloomberg and Car and Driver magazine and whatever the hell else. And to Kanda and Suzuki at the Ministry of Finance, JGBs are internally owned and can be manipulated and messed with, and they can be, you know, monetized, and because they're all internally owned by Japan, if not owned by the Bank of Japan. But that is not how major currency pairs work. Foreign exchange has, by nature, another side to it, another party, a GBP side, a USD side. So, act like the G7 currency that you are and stay the hell out of foreign exchange markets, verbally and directly. So that's why I made this little chart, if you will, of who the perpetrators are, the evidence for what they've done. And Japan should be extremely embarrassed for having to do this, okay? Especially on the currency side. Now, here's the flip side of my rant, okay? I suppose that if you are going to make an adjustment to yield curve control, then you would do it when the JGB yields aren't being pressed up against the upper bound, as I always say. And as per Deputy Governor Uchida, who is the only guy I take seriously at the Bank of Japan, as he has stated on several occasions now, that if you're going to tweak yield curve control, then it has to come by shock and surprise, as per the nature of yield curve control. And Uchida, Mastermind Uchida, saying that, that will forever be with me. You know, at every consensus, no change BOJ meeting in the back of my mind. Even though my core, broad, longer-term thesis on BOJ policy is that Japan is permanently stuck in central bank debt monetization, debt buying, you know, leaving interest rates extremely low, borrowing costs extremely low for the government, highly, 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 highly indebted, unsustainably indebted government. That's what I've always said. And I've also always said that, however, does not mean that there's going to be zero policy change or attempts. You know, it's not like it's going to be frozen in place as is for eternity. I mean, look at December 2022, right? For various reasons, right? Small tweaks can and will be attempted here and there. But should they come, they will be individual one-off things and not some so-called like start of a Japan tightening cycle as per the unanimous nonsense consensus from December of 2022. But I suppose that if he did want to shock markets, this is the way to do it. You do a fake press test, leak stuff like this out, get markets to out of your face, you know, you make your surprise tweak to yield curve. So I suppose there's that still possibility. All right, so let's talk about policy divergence potentially turning into policy convergence between the three majors this week, the BOJ, the ECB, and the Fed. Now, amongst these three, you know, you take any combination of the two of them, right? Of any of those combinations, it's going to be like any sort of policy divergence, convergence, whatever, it's going to be the least visibly evident between the US and the EU, right? Because both the Fed and the ECB, their tightening policies are respectively they're directionally parallel with one another, right? So there isn't, you know, there isn't really a difference. It's just a matter of like speed, I guess, of differentials, right? But they're still going in the same direction, like hiking rates, tightening policy. The Bank of Japan is the true outlier, right? True outlier contrarian amongst the rest of the world, right? The policy divergence benchmark, okay? So policy divergence and or convergence, that will be most evident in like the Bank Japan pairs, right? Fed versus BOJ, or ECB versus BOJ, right? And especially the latter, the ECB versus the BOJ, okay? If you recall, I had an episode referencing clips from Governor Ueda's first international public appearance since becoming BOJ governor at Central Portugal ECB event recently, right? He was on a panel next to Jay Powell, Christine Lagarde, Andrew Bailey, and the moderator, Sarah Eisen, had asked them, repeatedly asked them, do you guys talk amongst each other, like especially before policy meetings? And they kind of, you know, shifty-eyed or whatever, but they do. They all of them affirmed that they do, and that they do a lot. They talk often. And so in my view, what are they talking about? Well, obviously what they're talking about is they're revealing to each other what their respective policy plan is for an upcoming meeting, okay? And then finding out what their other counterparties are doing. And so Christine Lagarde met face-to-face with the Bank of Japan officials 3 days before, in person, in Europe, 3 days before the ECB meeting, the last ECB meeting, where she's pounding the table hawkishly at June ECB for, like, we're going to even hike in July and so on and so forth, right? And she's doing that because she has received assurances from the Bank of Japan, who is scheduled to release policy a day after the ECB, that the BOJ won't be lifting JGB rates and thereby allowing for Christine Lagarde to be as hawkish as she was and not causing, like, financial instability by doing so. So I believe that watching Christine Lagarde's conduct at ECB this week, that is probably going to be the most critical thing to determine whether or not there is a policy divergence or turning into policy convergence. In fact, that might be where it starts to get priced in. Okay? Might be. All right? So, for example, if Christine Lagarde were the same super hawkish, central banker as she was the last time, you can probably guess that the BOJ is going to be on hold a half a day later. But if she's more sanguine the last time, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's because she knows that the BOJ is about to tear the roof off the fixed income universe globally in, T-minus 20 hours. It could simply just mean that Eurozone PMIs were unanimously, horrendously terrible across the board or any number of reasons. But it can also mean because she did speak with Ueda and with Powell and with Bailey, who all said the same thing. Yeah, Ueda called, so BOJ is going to move on Friday. Get your guns ready for some serious rate fall. Let's hope there's not a potential illiquidity pocket that hits somewhere. And if one of our sovereign yield curves on the long end starts blowing up, get ready to not just implement some, stabilization QE, but to explain somehow that this is non-QE QE. But either way, just watch for what kind of contrast the June Christine Lagarde is and the July Christine Lagarde. And again, currency markets or currency pairs are fairly good reflections of where, at least, where markets are on this, right? And how much is priced in or what the sentiment is, okay? And so if Lagarde turns the hawkishness down a few notches, then the policy divergence trade would be to short EURJPY, Euro Yen. That would be the trade. That would be the better trade more than shorting USDJPY on policy convergence. And certainly better than, shorting EURUSD, right? Because EURJPY or ECB versus BOJ, that is far more definitive policy divergence, more so than USDJPY. And you can see it. You can see it right in the chart. Here is the euro yen in green, the euro yen cross year to date, and dollar yen. And you can see there's a huge outperformance of, euro strength against the yen versus dollar strength against the yen. And those yellow lines, by the way, that are vertical, those are Bank of Japan meeting days. And so the first two meetings on this chart, those are under Governor Kuroda. Those are his last two meetings. There was a ton of speculation, and when that speculation proved to be wrong, there was a ton of yen short covering that had ensued. But the subsequent two BOJ meetings, okay, where you see euro yen and dollar yen initially spike and then continue momentum upwards against JPY, especially the euro. You know, this is basically what I'm talking about, right? Because the ECB and the Bank of Japan were basically, they were parallel in policy. Okay, they at one point they had huge sovereign bond, you know, loaded up balance sheets, and they both had enacted negative policy rates. And then you have the ECB then just exit negative rate land and just start ripping rates higher and, you know, tapering off their balance sheet. Meanwhile, the Bank of Japan still has a negative policy rate and is still purchasing JGBs. So that is policy divergence to, like, the max, okay? And the only other major pair that's outperforming better, major pair that's outperforming better than, you know, the euro against JPY is the British pound versus the yen. And personally, for me, I do not want to short GBP against anything at the moment, because I think that the strength is something that I don't understand, and so therefore I won't touch, and I'm happy to just, you know, trade EUR or JPY to the downside for policy convergence trade. But if Christine Lagarde, if she just takes her hawkishness down a few pegs, then EUR JPY gets crushed, okay? And if Christine Lagarde is somehow just, like, neutral, but if the BOJ, you know, starts to get undovish or is perceived to start getting undovish, then EUR JPY still gets crushed. So in either scenario, right, Christine Lagarde gets slightly less hawkish or Bank of Japan gets slightly less dovish, EUR JPY would make the biggest move. And if you happen to have a simultaneous Lagarde turning dovish and Ueda turning hawkish, then euro yen, that cross is going to get crushed. But again, the crowded yen short position, it isn't just a BOJ or Japan thing, right? It could have nothing to do with BOJ or Japan at all. Okay, the yen is only being used as the, you know, the short leg of a currency cross rate of a currency pair, because it's the only major liquid currency and central bank that is just on policy on hold. So the trade is whatever hawkish central bank against a standstill one. BOJ is the standstill one, okay? And hence, shorting JPY is the divergence trade that might have nothing to do with Japan at all, right? So with that said, to finish up, let's take a look at a few charts that would be of relevance and consequence upon what would happen if there was yen strength to come out. In other words, if there was a perceived policy divergence to convergence, and therefore yen to strengthen, let's just take a cross-asset look, okay? And no, this is not comprehensive. This is just a couple of things that I just, you know, I put together. First of all, as long as we're talking about euro-yen, a sharp and sustained crash in EURJPY would likely take down European indices as well. Equity indices, okay? You can see this in, like, a multi-year chart of EURJPY versus the Euro Stoxx Index kind of moving in tandem, just generally speaking. Here it is year-to-date, EURJPY versus Euro Stoxx year-to-date. Seems that the SX5E index is clearly hitting a cement ceiling that it's finding a lot of trouble, you know, penetrating to the upside. It's not plummeting either, but if the yen strengthens and euro-yen plummets, so too may European shares, at least the broader, the, you know, the Euro Stoxx Index. All right, here's simple dollar-yen and the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield. And again, these lines are the Bank of Japan policy days. And as you can see, these Bank of Japan policy days also mark pivot points, or, you know, points of note for the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield, which is, might I remind you, the most important price or asset in the world. It is the world's risk-free rate, and it moves on BOJ days. And as of late, their tight correlation between 10-year, you know, U.S. Treasury yields and USD JPY, they have decoupled a bit. And given that dollar yen has been leading the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield, at least to the downside, and also before this as well, the chart gets cut off, but and if that is the case, then 10-year yields may be on the cusp of renewed upside. That is, unless JPY rallies and dollar yen falls and thereby keeps 10-year yields sub 4%. This is assuming that they do reconverge. And then finally, let's take a look at dollar yen versus dollar yuan. Okay? Once again, yellow lines are BOJ policy dates. And after each one, dollar CNH sells off a bit in the immediate before resuming weakness versus, you know, the USD in line with dollar yen, right? Now, this is the same chart, but I have added the CNH-JPY cross, China Yuan, Japanese Yen cross. And what you can see, CNH-JPY used to mirror percent for percent with dollar yen in the beginning, right? And why is that? Well, it's because if CNH is, you know, more or less pegged to the U.S. dollar and therefore is going to behave like a proxy of it, then CNH-JPY and USD-JPY are going to probably behave in similar fashions, unless USD-CNH were to move. So, you can see that until May, and this is where Michael Howell from Cross Border Capital comes in with his yen weaponization thesis, but they were moving kind of lockstep percent in until May, and then the yuan starts really weakening and crosses through the 7 handle when dollar yen breaks out in mid-May. Okay, dollar yen has a lot of influence over dollar yuan price action, by which I mean that they can be lockstep sometimes, many times. All right, and so let's just actually zoom in to most recent, where we sit right now. Here's where we are right now. Take a look at this, okay? As I said, dollar yen and dollar yuan, percent for percent, over the first half of this chart in July. Until that point where they split off. What was that? That was when the PBOC went hyper-aggressive that one day last week with a 600 pip yuan strengthening fix. That is what split these two apart. Okay? But all else equal, if dollar yen is kind of being somewhat of a proxy of dollar yuan price action, then you can basically look at dollar yen and see, like, this is what dollar CNH would be doing if the Chinese were not actively, proactively, and aggressively doing everything they can to strengthen the yuan or to weaken the dollar against the yuan. Okay? And so it seems that dollar yuan should be a lot higher than it currently is being artificially suppressed at. So either, you know, dollar yen falls back down upon a policy convergence, or dollar yuan is ripe for a swift and instant 2% higher move or weaker CNH move to get back in line. Okay, and then last chart for real. But what happens if the yen strengthens on any policy convergence or policy divergence trade unwind? What happens to short yen carry trades that get liquidated? So let's take a look via the Mexican peso. First of all, MXN USD. This is a pretty incredible bull run currency pair, right? Long Mex peso, short USD, it's killing it. However, killing it as it may be, take a look at what the Mexican outright strength is doing against the JPY outright weakness. That is one hell of an EM to DM cross. And this is a retail favorite in Japan. Levered long, the Mexican peso, Japanese yen cross. So what do these carry trade proceeds fund? Well, they fund risk assets many times. Things like NDX and Nikkei since April. Take a look at this chart, right? Year to date, or even before that. These assets really have nothing to do with each other. MXN JPY, NDX futures, and Nikkei 225 futures. But they all just kind of lock up together in April when everything just kind of rallies together. And a lot of that is because of carry trades that are being used to fund these risk positions and these risk assets. So, policy convergence that rallies the yen can unwind the short yen carry trades, which can therefore unwind risk assets, and God knows what that's defined as even. I'm just picking these two. All right, so this is a week of, actually potentially a market-moving week. It could be a significant, pivot point week. So, like I said, watch for Christine Lagarde's hawkish to dovish tilt in the context of, this tornado of crappy European PMIs that just came out. For potential clues on BOJ, for which, by the way, Goldman and MUFG are currently calling for change in yield curve control on Friday. And then most of all, just remember, the Bank of Japan is a press and media prostitution ring, even on Bank of Japan Day itself, okay? Which is why I said before that I can't make a call on BOJ policy until it's like the day before. And even still, I probably can't, because they even do press tests on the day of, on the morning of, okay? So I need to see where JGBs are trading is what I said, right? And or what they've gone through already. This is exactly what I'm talking about. You just saw what happened to JGBs on Friday. Okay? So it's a very big week. That's it for me. Stay tuned this week to Market Depth as all this happens. And on behalf of Market Depth, my name is Wes Nakamura, and we will see you soon. Thank you. Bye.